Good morning, everybody. Welcome to The Journey Home with Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson. And here we are reading from a Ken Wapnick book called The Journey Home. And it's all about the obstacles to peace from text chapter 19. And so Ken has made a pretty extensive book based on that particular section. And I'm finding myself getting really empowered.
Pun intended.
By reading this section and reading this.
Yeah.
So.
And it's highlighted by the idea. I'm realizing highlighted could be also a pun given your recently restored utility power. Only the useful power that we really looking for is the not the utility power, but the power of our mind's decision to choose against insanity and for the sanity of the real thought system that the A Course in Miracles provides us guidelines to return to.
Yeah, and that is really our only power.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, that really is our only power. We either choose to align with the power of our Father, or we choose this poor, pitiful, meaningless, what is it that Jesus says in lessons?
Shabby substitute.
Shabby, that's a good one, shabby substitute. It's lesson 52, I think, where he says it.
Yeah.
Which just cracks me up so much. Because Jesus is such a card. Let's see.
He's the joker.
Yeah. So lesson.
But the joke is really on it's not on oneness, it's on belief in lack thereof.
Exactly. So, yeah, so lesson 52 that goes with 52.5, my thoughts do not mean anything. Jesus mm-hmm. says, I have no private thoughts, and it is only private thoughts of which I am aware. What can these thoughts mean? They do not exist, and so they mean nothing. Yet my mind is part of creation and part of its creator. Would I not rather join the thinking of the universe than to obscure all that is really mine with my pitiful and meaningless private thoughts?
Well, there you have it. The ego's blackout is this disempowering misunderstanding and belief in separate identities, separate interests, and being isolated from the rest of everything. And that's only because we've chosen, on some level we're not consciously aware, and then haven't forgiven ourselves for that decision. And so the whole process that we're engaged in is bringing that decision to the surface in myriad ways until we are able to unmake that decision consistently by forgiving ourselves for whatever happened.
Exactly. So this could just as easily say, would I not rather join with the power of my Creator than to obscure all of my all of what really is by thinking of my poor, pitiful, powerless little self.
Alliteration there. The alliteration cops are waiting behind the billboard to give you a ticket.
That's right, because I am a pitiful, powerless, poor person. Personality.
Profound, partner.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So yeah, so wouldn't I rather just join with God's power than to sit here in the dark?
Really?
So fortunately, the sun was coming up right when the power went out. So
good.
Yeah, so it wasn't dark. I didn't wake up in the dark. I just
that's also kind of symbolic too. It's like, you know, once when it seems the most dark and bleak. Because we've been relying on artificial light, if you will, or artificial power, and that, you know, not that the sun is real in metaphysical terms, but it's certainly more stable than any locality's utility power in terms of longevity and historically and probably in terms of the future, but at least for, you know, probably a few million years anyway. It's not a bad metaphor. We're relying on something far greater. In this case, the far greater is everything in truth.
I was thinking, you know, when in the beginning in Genesis, when there's a whole description of how God made everything, the first thing he said was, "Let there be light." And there was light. And then about 3 or 4 days later, he created the sun and the moon. So the light that he was saying, "Let there be," was not the light of the sun or the moon. The light that God created in the very beginning was the truth of what we are. We are the light.
In that Bible story, he didn't say, "Let there be Tesla and Edison, let them duke it out as to which utility power is best." You know, it wasn't even that. Right?
Yeah, it wasn't even that. Nope. "Let there be fire. I have fire now."
It's so easy to anthropomorphize and transform down the. I'm using some electrical metaphors. The message of the Course and make it about form when it's really always and only about the mind.
That's right, and that's where the light is. There's a crack in everything, and that's where the light gets in.
Exactly.
That is the absolute truth. So
now there are two friends of mine named Lynn who are referring to that Leonard Cohen lyric. I'm gonna have to find that song.
An amazing song. I just played that for my husband the other day. He had never heard it, so.
I guess I'll have to Google it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Get the one with, I can't remember their names. Anyway, two beautiful ladies who sing it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really nice. Anyway.
And of course, the metaphoric crack that lets the light in terms of what we're talking about, is the little willingness that is our willingness, like Toto, to pull back the curtain and see that this scary, you know, terrifying apparition that we're having is just an unfounded dream. And we can afford to, with the reunited, feed, you know, the little guy behind the curtain who realizes, you know, he's been trying to do this on his own and you know, without being connected back to his comrades, you know, and the shared purpose, it's a scary reality. But once rejoined in toto, shall we say, we have a restored peacefulness and a sanity, and we realize we don't have to be uncertain, lonely, and in constant fear, because that's just the ego's default, and there's a real alternative that we can choose instead.
Yes, absolutely, and the real alternative is the only alternative. It is the real alternative. The rest of it doesn't even exist. It is a story.
Yep.
So we're reading now from the Journey Home with Dr. Kenneth Wapnick, and I think we're about, we're at 21% is what my
kid
was telling
me.
Wow,
that's about when I pulled the book together with Keeping My Thumb where we left off. It looks about a fifth of the way through it, sure enough. So another 4 years since we've been reading this, about a year.
Yeah.
I think we'll be through this thing.
Possibly, unless there's a lot of appendices and things that we have to go look things up. But
well, there are some appendices, but not too many.
Not too many. All right. No. So you know where we're at? You want to read?
Okay, sure. In the printed, the Treeware version of The Journey Home, The Obstacles to Peace and the Course in Miracles by Dr. Kenneth Wapnick, we are on the top of page 110 in the print version. And I'll just start right in, and hopefully you can catch where we're at, Lynn.
Yep.
So Ken says, "Moreover, we are cautioned against seeking for anything in the world to give us pleasure. Much later in the text is a section called, quote, seek not outside yourself, unquote, which asks us not to seek outside, i.e. in the body, for any idol, any special relationship that we believe can give us pleasure. Well, I think the world is littered with examples of how we've all tried that, been there, done that, and you know, as Eddie Murphy would say, "Wookin' put up in all the wrong places." You know, if you remember
exactly,
that
put
SNL
up.
Skit.
Oh my right? God, I love Eddie Murphy. Yes.
Yep. Yep. So, but you know, we do that. We try to find peace and, you know, a truly fulfilling experience of love in the world, and think that there's some conditions or set of conditions or circumstances or special people or special groups of people or combinations of people or you know, whatever, you know, whether it's relationships or jobs or money or health, you know, some sort of biological status for our bodies or our geography or weather, or, you know, the list is endless of the conditions that we impose upon this dream of space-time to try to make us, you know, in our deluded minds, peaceful and happy. And we think that, you know, there's some magical combination, and we keep trying the magic left and right and up and down and backwards and forwards, thinking that we just haven't stumbled on it yet. But eventually, you know, we think we're getting close to exhausting all the possibilities sometimes, but the ego says, oh, there's yet one more, you know, there'll always be another. You know, particularly in terms of relationships, we think, yeah, well, this person is my friend or my lover or my, you know, life partner, working out, I'll just, you know, swap out for another, or this job, or, you know, all those things, this health regimen, you know, all the conditions in the world. You know, we have a huge list if we just stop to recite just even the major categories, let alone the minor ones. But, you know, it's just interesting to watch ourselves going down that road again and again and again. And that's, I think, a huge part of our forgiveness classroom, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Yeah. That consistently reworking, redoing, reordering, reimagining. We're just constantly just trying to come up with a better solution, and you know, the you know, eventually it comes to us that the only real solution is the real solution, which is you know, looking inside our own thinking and asking the Holy Spirit to help us change our minds, perceive a different thing, to know the truth. And, you know, that correction of the mind is really the only thing that needs to happen, because thinking outside of ourselves is looking at the effect of our thinking. We're looking at the effects of our thinking and trying to fix those instead of looking at the cause of our thinking and going to the source of, you know, where the problem really is. So, you know, it's an inside job. That's it.
It really is. Yeah, and as always, because it's an inside job, doesn't mean we ignore the outside job. So I was just, as you were sharing that, Lynn, I was thinking, you know, it's so easy to get involved in love and confusion, thinking, oh, well, all I have to do is, you know, go meditate in a cave somewhere, or, you know, divest myself of my worldly possessions and become a monk, or, you know, it's not about that. I mean, Bill and Helen were hardly led a monkish existence. They were in the heart of New York City, you know, it's like they're almost a symbol of complexity and and busyness and so forth. So it doesn't mean we stop doing all the things that we're doing in the world. It just means we do them with a completely different expectation that those things aren't going to bring us peace or happiness. It's really the choice of our inner counsel, a.k.a. Holy Spirit, a.k.a. Jesus in the Course, or our inner kindness teacher, whatever we use as our identifier. It could be Buddha for some. It could be, you know, some other, you know, Ramana Maharshi or or you know, someone like that. Yeah, it could be anyone that really represents to us a beacon or a symbol or a representative of that awareness we took with us into the dream. So on a pragmatic level, for example, I'll just pick some of my own mental checklist du jour. After we're done with this recording this morning, Lynn, I'm going to get up and get breakfast, get dressed, probably go for a walk when it's warmer. I bought some new batteries for the smoke detectors in my mom's house here where I'm staying for another month, better part of another month, and get those installed. I'm going to work on some websites. I'm going to upload an edited video for the Foundation for Inner Peace and then make a new post on their website. I'm going to do some things on a couple other client websites. So I've got my little mental checklist. It doesn't mean, I'll brush my teeth and take a shower. You know, just do all the normal stuff. It doesn't mean we stop doing all the things we'd be doing anyway. It just means that when we do them, we can remember, as I'm doing this, this is not what's bringing me peace. The thing that's bringing me peace is the choice in my mind to listen to another teacher that says, none of this is real. The reality is beyond this. And by forgiving my investment in each of these things, to the imaginary power, I'm taking my power back from the dream and reinvesting it, like going from utility power to solar power, if you will, metaphorically, or wind or small hydro or wind or, you know, something that you know, maybe metaphorically seems more sustainable and so forth. But it's really, you know, none of those really are truly sustainable in the world, but the only thing that's truly sustainable is really our reliance on the one source of power in the mind, which is our true identity, which is completely unified, innocent spirit, and that we all share, and that it makes no distinctions among persons or things or anything.
Exactly.
How's that for a ramble?
That was pretty darn good.
Okay. Well, anyway, so do you want to read on?
Sure. Let's see. Did you finish that? Oh, okay.
I think you might have finished the quote from chapter 29, right?
No.
Maybe you're starting that quote again then.
Okay. So here's the, let's see, the quote from chapter 29 says, whenever you attempt to reach a goal in which the body's betterment is cast as major beneficiary, you try to bring about your death. What? For you believe that you suffer lack, and lack is death. To sacrifice is to give up and thus to be without and to have suffered loss. And by this giving up is life renounced. Seek not outside yourself. The search implies you are not whole within and fear to look upon your devastation, but prefer to seek outside yourself for what you are. So what I hear Jesus saying to me here is that if I'm trying to do anything to make the body better, the world better, politics better, my house better, the attempt to make anything better is a belief in death. It's a belief that it's possible for anything to be less than whole. So, you know, if I think my body is less than whole, then I think, oh yeah, you know, I might have cancer, or, you know, gosh, I have a tummy ache, or, you know, right now I have a lot of congestion, which, you know, constantly is. And every time I try to heal that, cure that, make that better, make that right, really what I'm saying is I am restricted to this small being and this small part of reality is disconnected from the whole, and so being small and restricted, I have to protect myself, I have to defend myself, I have to heal myself, I have to make myself acceptable in some way. So it's admission, I'm admitting that I am less than what God made. I am not the Holy Son of God. I am this body that needs to be improved. It needs to be fixed. It needs to be healed. And I don't think we think that. I don't think that's a common thought in people's heads. I found out that my friend has cancer, and I'm going to send them healing waves, or I'm going to pray for them, or I'm going to anything that I do is actually accepting that they are less than whole. Anything that I do in the world that says you are broken, you need to be fixed, is accepting that they are not the Son of God. And in the same note, I'm accepting that I'm not the Son of God either. I'm accepting that brokenness is a possibility and that sickness is a reality. So this is pretty profound, I think, what Jesus says here. This is from text chapter 29, section 7. And I'm going to read this again just because it's so profound. Jesus says, whenever you attempt to reach a goal in which the body's betterment is cast as major beneficiary, you try to bring about your death. For you believe that you can suffer lack, and lack is death. To sacrifice is to give up, and thus to be without, and to have suffered loss. And by giving up is life, by this giving up is life renounced. Seek not outside yourself. The search implies you are not whole within, and fear to look upon your devastation, but prefer to seek outside yourself for what you are.
As you're sharing that, Lynn, it occurred to me, one of the things that I know I've read this more than a few times over the years, but the word that, or phrase that struck me is major beneficiary. And if you think about the idea that the body can benefit, if the body and the world are illusions, then it's another metaphor that comes to mind is basically, if we were to identify with our clothing, which we're very comfortable with the idea that clothing wears out, and after a few years, or in my case, a few decades, you throw that shirt or that pair of shoes out and get new ones, right? Well, our bodies, basically, Jesus here is saying that our bodies are essentially in the same category. It's like the major beneficiary is not. It's not the clothing. It's not the outer. It's the inner. But if we try to say, well, gosh, I must defend this clothing at all costs, forgetting about what the clothing really is there to serve, if we think of the body as an end in itself, we're back to level confusion. It doesn't mean we don't take care of our clothing. We don't wash it and keep it away from chemicals and things that would stain them, all that kind of common stuff. But what it does mean is that, when those things inevitably occur, that, even just over time things becoming threadbare, you just say, oh, no big deal. I'll get another shirt, or I'll buy another pair of shoes when the soles wear through and I feel my foot against the concrete. but we forget that our body doesn't have to be the beneficiary. We can still do the things that preserve the longevity of those things, but when we can remember that our infinite spirit and that infinitely shared spirit really is our real identity, and that's the only truly valuable thing in this world. And that is that identity, that capital S self, unlike the little S self that you were alluding to in your comments earlier this morning, Lynn, when you were describing that, is that self is immortal, immutable, unchangeable, unchanging, and eternally at peace, innocent, and free. And we don't have to do anything. We don't have to learn anything or earn anything. Or all we have to do is remove the blocks to the awareness of that real identity, that real presence that's within us. And that's, I think, how we kind of grow into our awareness that the Holy Spirit, that the Course talks about, isn't some foreign thing. That's the gateway back to our real identity. That's really our true inner voice. That is from our true capital S self speaking not only to us but through us, and it comes out in the world as kindness, and it comes out in the world as shared interests, and manifests in that way. But it's not about the form. It's never about the form. It's always about what can the form help serve while we believe we're in the dream, in order to minimize the fear and hasten our return back to the source of the mind that's beyond all fear.
Yes, so. Yes, and everything that the form reminds us of, the lack, the sickness, the the fear, everything that the form reminds us of is an actual lesson that is put in there in order to show us the contrast.
Exactly. Seen properly, you know, everything becomes a classroom for forgiveness instead of a prison for guilt.
Right. And a punishment, or, you know, we see it as, oh, that's just the result of, you know, you sat out in the sun too long and now you have skin cancer, or, you know, you smoke cigarettes and now you have lung cancer, or you didn't eat the right thing and now you've got diabetes, and, you know, you're we're blaming all the wrong things. We are looking for nub in all the wrong places. Looking for nub.
Well, the examples you point out shed some light on the idea that, you know, those, because of our beliefs and because the power of our mind is so strong, we associate certain physical conditions with physical results and outcomes, but we ascribe mental properties to those things, which is, again, you know, it seems like a broken record, but it's so much of what we share on this program is the level of confusion is never about the form. They, of course, says somewhere, and I think early in the text, is that, you know, the forms merely give form to the desire, the decision in the mind to, you know, change the other teacher. So, and that's really the only decision we need to make. We don't have to, we do all the things that correspond to our belief systems. You know, like, for example, when I go make breakfast, I'm going to put things in my body in the right proportions that I believe are healthy based on my current very minuscule understanding of biology and medicine and all that stuff. But, you know, sure, why not do those things? You know, it's really just a reflection of kindness, a reflection of the decision in the mind to be kind to everyone, including this particular body that I think I'm, you know, in. But the more I remember to not identify with this as this outer garment, so to speak, as the be-all, end-all, the more the kindness just becomes automatic, and it's not the major beneficiary. It's not the big deal. It's not the be-all, end-all that I'm focused on. It's really what I'm focused on when I choose to you know, look within instead of without for my peace, is I'm seeing that I really have an inexhaustible source of peace within, and a pathetic at best source without. And really, the only things that seem to be the source without are special relationships that are cleverly designed by the ego to seemingly satisfy for a short period of time, a little bit of a delivery, and then fade away and become special hate objects instead of special love objects. But beyond both of those, the special love and the special hate, is the real love, which is unchanging. And that's our true nature as spirit, that's beyond space and time and beyond the entire material universe as we think of it. So, and dwarfs that reality, including the light that we were talking about earlier, the electromagnetic light. You know, if you took the output of every sun and supernova and galaxy together, the electromagnetic light of all the mass of the universe and all the energy that it seems to put out is dwarfed by the real light of our being that is in what we metaphorically call the heaven of our shared identity. And that I think that's why relationships are stressed in A Course in Miracles, because it's through our relationships with everyone and everything that we see our unforgiveness and see the ineffectiveness of it, and, you know, through looking at our condemnations and judgments and misgivings and annoyances, and just saying, wow, that's silly. Why would I make a big deal out of that? And then as we do that, we become freer and freer and more peace.
Exactly.
Because we discover it's within.
Yeah, we're looking at our choices and recognizing that we chose that. You know, and don't be in denial of your choice. Just recognize, I chose that. So yeah. I can easily.
So it's an intermediate step then, while we still believe that certain physical things are cause and have physical effects, strictly believe, of course, it's helpful to, you know, as Gary and Arch teachers would, you know, say, and, you know, throw the dog a bone a little bit, and you know, essentially we're playing ego's own game. We're distracting it with things that appear to be kind on the level of form, which really are nothing but reflections of the decision to be kind in the mind, that then gives us the opportunity to use our mind for you know, restoring it to its real purpose, which is to be at peace. So,
exactly.
And to share that peace. Yeah.
Absolutely. So so you want to read on?
Sure. After the quote, Ken continues, "The last sentence contains the crux of the ego strategy. It makes sin, guilt, and fear real, setting up the need for the special relationship to complete ourself, which is in truth already complete as Christ." So we don't need to go wookin' to nub in all the wrong places.
Nub is right here.
Yeah, to the ego, completion occurs when two people who believe they are lacking within themselves, quote, join, unquote, together in completing each other. I think we've seen plenty of examples in our lives and everyone else's. Thus, two people who were less than whole are made whole through supplementing their deficiency by taking from another. When this works, the ego calls this love. I mean, when you spell it out that way, isn't it kind of obvious? You know, when Ken points it, I'm going to read that sentence again because it's just so obvious how silly that is in truth, and the folly of duality. Because any dualistic system where we think we're apart from anything or anyone else means that there's something that could be an enemy or an opposite or a threat, because it's something that is a not self. You know, the little s self always has some kind of other, because it's not the capital S self that's all inclusive. So, thus two people who were less than whole are made whole through supplementing their deficiency by taking from another. And that brings in the laws of chaos to mind, of course, which we could spend another few hours on that. And then Ken goes on, when this works, the ego calls this love. And now he's quoting from chapter scene. The, quote, better, unquote, self the ego seeks is always one that is more special. So look out, New Age self-improvement metaphysics. I mean, if we think that we're trying to improve an incomplete self, you know, you can't get there from there, from here, from there, or there from here.
Exactly.
Because as long as there's something outside, by definition, we're going to be on an endless search and following the ego seek but do not find maxim again. So I'll read that again. The, quote, better, unquote, self the ego seeks is always one that is more special. And whoever seems to possess a special self is, quote, loved, unquote, for what can be taken from him. I think this is so important when we look at what we think we want from other people in just our everyday relationships, not just romantic and life partners, but you know, people in the grocery store, clerks and waiters, and I think that's why Ken's audio and video programs about, you know, making about the other person is so important. So when we think in terms of how can I, you know, make my primary beneficiary, if you will, my primary goal to have everyone feel the innocence and peace that's within them, and not what can I do that will benefit me at the expense of someone else, you know. And I think a lot of this is unconscious, but when we make it about the other person, I think that really helps undo that. So he goes on, where both partners see this special self in each other, the ego sees a, quote, union made in heaven. So, you know, again, the idea that someone else, something that we lack, is at the root of so much of our relationships in the world. And I would suggest that if we would subtract that element from most of our relationships, we'd all, you know, be relatively for the most part, living in caves, each one by themselves, in terms of, you know, the interactions that we have. But I think sometimes it's scary when we first start looking at how much little s self, selfishness is going on in our everyday stuff. But when we look at it without condemnation and start to see that, and, you know, working in our own minds and not recoiling in terror, but just say, okay, Holy Spirit, let's look at this together. We become more peaceful, and simultaneously we're better equipped and better able because of that reservoir of peace that comes from looking at this and not retreating in stark terror. We can say, oh yeah, I was afraid of love. I'm a little less afraid of love today because I've seen the ego strategy in operation in my own relationships. I can now afford to make a different choice, a different teacher. And then that expresses just naturally as kindness, and we don't have to think about what we're going to do or say. We just are truly being our capital S self, recognizing it's the same as everyone else's capital S self. We're all in the same boat, and we, you know, the expressions of kindness that result from that awareness just become automatic and simple and easy, and hey, we're more fun to be around, frankly. Right?
Yeah, because we're not in fear. And that's the bottom line, right? Is when we do that, then the idea or the reason for fear disappears, because fear is based on a sense of guilt. It's based on a sense of sin and guilt, and that, you know, I've done something wrong and that something has gone wrong. And when I am wholly open to loving my brother as a whole being, as a person that doesn't have is not loving me because they're trying to get something out of me or trying to make something, you know, it's and I'm not trying to get anything out of them because I feel whole and I know they're whole, then we're not needing to be completed by another. And so the fear that we have that this other is going to somehow or the other change us or take ourself away or attack us or make us small or any of the things that we think when we deal, and you know that when you have relationships with people, there's always this give and take kind of thing, this tit for tat or what's the words that are out right now that are so popular? it doesn't really matter. It's a bargain. And when I recognize that there is no, you can't have a bargain when you both have the same thing. You know, I mean, it doesn't work that way.
Right. But at least in terms of the Course in Metaphysics, if we recognize that we're all the same one self, there's nothing to be had outside that self and nothing needed. So, you know, what's the point of a bargain? The bargain implies that there's something lacking.
Right, exactly. And so, yeah, when I recognize there's nothing lacking and that what we both have is the same thing, then we're not deficient. There's nothing to give or take. We just share in the wholeness. And that sharing in the wholeness, there's no reason to fear. There's nothing to attack or be attacked for. You know, there's nobody going to take something away from me because they all have the same thing I have.
And nothing to get hung about.
And nothing to get hung about, exactly. So, you know, what a great thing. And so,
the concluding remark that Ken makes in regard to this short commentary on the belief that the body can give us pleasure before he goes into the belief it can give us pain is, he says, in summary then, since in truth there is nothing outside us, there can be nothing there to truly desire nor to truly give up. All that we sacrifice is our belief that the separation is real. There is nothing to sacrifice because there is nothing else but God. Somehow that reminds me of a Dan Ferraro Bizarro cartoon where it shows this new arrival in hell and the devil standing there, and this guy's looking all around and sees all these TVs, and his comment is, wow, I didn't realize there'd be television here. And the devil's response is, there's nothing but television here.
I'm in hell.
I that first came out as I was nearing the end of a 20-year, nearly 20-year, two-decade career in the video broadcast industry, working, you know, behind the scenes in the TV industry. I just thought that, I cracked up when I saw that one.
That is pretty dang funny, all right.
anyway, okay. There's nothing else but God and truth, but that's a good thing, you know, so. Do you want to read on?
Sure. And so then from the Obstacles of Peace, Jesus says, but neither can it, the body, in brackets from Ken, bring you fear of pain. Again, the body literally does nothing. It simply carries out the wishes of the mind. The ego sees the source of pleasure and pain in the body, but the only real pleasure comes from doing God's will. We know that from the all real pleasure comes from doing God's will. That's the only thing that really is pleasurable for us, even though we don't know what that is. And pain comes from denying it. Again, the problem and the answer are found in the mind, since the body is simply the shadow of the mind's thoughts. Ooh, the body is the shadow of the mind's thoughts. And then from chapter 19, Jesus says, pain is the only quote-unquote sacrifice the Holy Spirit asks, and this he would remove. So he's asking us to sacrifice our pain, to give up our pain. Because that is, for so many people, the pain is what makes me real.
The zombie scream, no, don't do that. But we're far more zombie identified than we realize, right?
Exactly. and
not that far peace, it's Halloween.
It reminds me of, a lot of times people when they're having emotional and mental difficulties, they'll do things like they'll cut themselves just to feel the pain, to make themselves feel real. And there's a great song by the Nine Inch Nails called Hurt. And that's what it says. I hurt myself today just to make myself feel real. You know, I cut myself just to feel the reality of myself. You know, that's how we think. You know, if I'm, you know, real and, you know, my lover dumps me, you know, that's real pain. If I'm real and my child dies, that's real pain. You know, these are, we make it real, by our connection to that sense of loss. That sense of pain is what makes it seem real to the ego. But to the Christ, that pain cannot be real and that suffering cannot be real. What we truly are doesn't feel any of that or experience any of that. And so if we're experiencing that, it's because we are focusing on the body as our only reality. You know, the body of our child who died or the body of our self who cries, the body of our lover who is hurt and suffering from emotional pain or whatever. We equate all that pain with reality. So then Ken says, the only thing the Holy Spirit asks us is to give up is pain. And pain comes when we make the body real, whether we choose it as a source of pleasure or pain, as the world judges it. Earlier in the text, in the context of crossing the bridge to the real world, Jesus says the following. The new perspective you will gain from crossing over will be the understanding of where heaven is. From this side, it seems to be outside and across the bridge. Yet as you cross to join it, it will join with you and become one with you. And you will think in glad astonishment that for all this, you gave up nothing. And that's from text chapter 16, section 6.
A whole lot of nothing going on.
Yep.
Yeah. As you're reading this, I was reminded of one of the things that struck me as particularly insightful in particularly the first time that I read, but every time I re-encounter it in one of Gary's Renard's books, where Ardner Persa suggests that pain is a mental process. I think that can be very helpful on multiple levels. Certainly on a mental level, because it's where it's at. when we remember that when we're experiencing either physical pain or quote unquote, I could put quotes from physical pain too, but or emotional pain in quotes. It's the same thing. It's a decision in the mind to identify with limitation, to identify with the ego, and that is indeed a painful choice, and it's a choice of not being willing to relinquish the unconscious, unfounded guilt, and that's why I think our forgiveness classroom is not only challenging but rewarding. It's challenging only in the sense that we've so over-rehearsed, over-identified with the pain self, Eckhart Tolle calls it the pain body, if you will. But that's really just the ego thought system. If the universe, as we think of it, is an illusion, if there is no world, and that's a central thought the Course attempts to teach, then the identification with the interpretations that the nerve impulses that our body sends our brain and our identification with the brain, it becomes pretty obvious. Like, well, okay, yeah, this is a mental process. It's even if we are willing to concede that, well, maybe it's just because I interpret these sensations that I'm having in this body, this particular body, which is certainly I'm not limited to in truth, but by golly, for the most of us, we seem to have done so. But those interpretations are really the source of the distortion that tells us that the unexamined message, the payload, if you will, the data that's transmitted on the carrier wave of the nerve impulses is you are a body, and as a body, it's the result of your choosing against perfect oneness or God, and because of this unconscious guilt, you deserve to suffer. I mean, that's really, closer to the heart of what motivates our pain in this world, no matter what it is. So, and it doesn't mean that we should be hard on ourselves or mean-spirited to ourselves or anyone who's going through anything that appears to be challenging. In fact, the contrary is completely indicated, because when we realize that everything that is painful is a call for help, we're basically giving ourselves an opportunity every time we recognize that to be kind to ourselves and or the seeming others in our lives, right?
Exactly. And that's the lens that we're getting here. We're not getting mm-hmm. lessons on how to cope with pain. We're getting lessons on how to see the truth of it and to see beyond it and to cure the pain, to get rid of the pain, mm-hmm. because we're no longer caught up in the belief of the specialness of the body. And, the whole idea of pain being just a mental thing, that's absolutely the truth, because you can test it out yourself. Just get a headache.
I was waiting to see what you come up with, because I was going to say, kids, don't try this at home.
No.
The severity of it.
Yeah, no. I mean, you could hurt yourself intentionally, but get a headache, have a headache, and then take some aspirin.
Yeah.
And see, how that pain goes away. You did nothing to change the source of the pain, which could be, brain tumor or something, who knows, or it could be high blood pressure, you could have a could be many things that could be causing that particular pain, but you can take a drug and that pain will go away. You won't experience that pain. Same thing with mental or psychological. You can have a psychological or mental upset and be suffering and take a drug and that you no longer care about those things. Those things go away from you. Why? Because they're not real. Neither is the cure is not real either, but it's all in our mind. All of it.
Yeah, and sometimes the drug, if you will, for emotional pain may take the form of phoning a friend, to use a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I mean, it could be as simple as saying, well, gee, I'm feeling a little disconnected. I'm going to call, you know, someone I haven't thought of in years or out of the blue or, and then, you know, you get to talking and, or you go somewhere where there's kindred spirits or, you know, that where you feel accepted and that sort of thing. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing any of those things in the level of form. I mean, I'm doing this right now, talking with you every Saturday because I enjoy our conversations. I don't actually, in truth, need to be sitting in front of my computer doing this. I could really use other mechanisms, but because I believe that this is helpful, I do this over and over again because it reinforces the idea that I'm not a body and that I am a mind, and I like to think that you're doing something similar, and anyone who happens to be listening is doing something similar, and we're all having these little aha moments that these moments of kindness and sharing and levity give us an opportunity to let go of our frankly masochistic silliness that the ego inflicts as we discover that the ego is not our friend and let go of it. So.
Yeah, but you know what's really kind of a little bit different between me taking an aspirin for a headache or me connecting with you, calling a friend, whatever, is that when, I'm doing something for my own self, but when I am joining with my brother, that is actually a whole completely different situation because in that joining, real healing does come. Real happiness does come because of the connection between myself and my brother. So, the healing that comes about from the joining does have a power. You know, there is something powerful in that, maybe it's just letting go of my own belief in myself and my own thinking and allowing, opening up and allowing for something else to come through. There is a true power there that really has nothing to do with the body or the mind or anything. It has to do with getting closer to the truth and reality of what we are, which is one. And mm-hmm. and so the closer we get to the one, the more at peace and free that we feel. It shifts everything. So I think phoning a friend is probably the best option. if you have a scale of, what's the best and what's the most likely to actually be helpful, connecting with a brother mm-hmm. is always going to have a greater power because it's the power of oneness that we are.
Yeah, and it's never about the form or the dogma or the behavior. You know, and so I was just thinking in some cases, the healing might take the form of putting your phone down and talking to someone next to you. And in another context, another situation, it might take the form of picking up your phone or tablet or whatever and connecting in that way. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter, and it's really not never about the form, but it's always about the decision in the mind to see others' interests as our own. And that shared identity is really what we're restoring and uncovering as we practice our forgiveness and recognize that we're all in the same boat, we're all working on the same awakening together, even though it doesn't seem like that sometimes. But everyone really, truly, deeply wants to go home from the dream of separation.
Yeah, and that is the key right there, is that no matter what they may express, how they may act, what they may do, it doesn't matter because you know the truth is that everyone wants to return home. Everyone wants to remember God. That is universal. Doesn't matter what they say in the world, what their attitude is, what their belief is, what they write, what they speak, none of that. How they act, none of that. Every single human, every single being, in not just even human, every single being in the universe longs for that reconnection to our source.
Mm-hmm.
And so the proper answer always is to join. The proper answer always is to reach out, and knowing that they want what you want as well. And that's, you know, true charity, you know, even if they don't know they need it, even if they don't know they want it, you know they do. And
the relinquishment of judgment is always the solution, isn't it?
It is always the solution, the letting go of that fear. So I'm going to read on. Let's see, is it...
on this side?
On this side, okay. On this, quote-unquote, side, our belief in the reality of the body and identification with it is as our valuable self. The things of the world, pleasure or pain, are essential to our survival and therefore of great value to us. Giving them up within the ego's thought system ultimately means the sacrifice of our self and our very existence. But once we can shift our identification to the Holy Spirit and the memory of our true self, then everything in the world fades into insignificance, and so we are truly giving up nothing. So on one side of the door, it seems like we're going to give up everything, but once we get through that door, we recognize we gave up nothing. You know, it's
like, and glad astonishment. I love that phrase.
And glad astonishment. I love it.
But the glad astonishment is really only after we've chosen to take the hand of the Holy Spirit and, you know, practice our kindness and forgiveness lessons and in an extended number of practice periods, remember that, you know, nothing real can be threatened and nothing unreal exists, and I really, you know, bring it home, integrate it, not just intellectually, but, you know, apply it in the lab assignment of our lives in this world. And after a few years, and sometimes many years, we start to get the crack.
Yep.
And unless the light starts to get a little wider. And it's like, oh, yeah, I could see peace instead of this. And I'm not upset for the reason I think. And I can be more peaceful by just forgiving everything that seems to happen.
Exactly. Excuse me. So after reading these passages and others similar to them, students have frequently concluded the course is advocating some kind of asceticism. That interpretation, though, could only come from the confusion of the body with the mind, or form with the content. What the course is saying, which is made clear in these sections, and especially in the next one, the attraction of pain, is that the body does nothing at all. The body is not the source of sin. It is not the source of pleasure. It is not the source of pain. It is not the source of anything.
Nothing.
Nothing from nothing is nothing.
As you read that, pardon the interruption, but I just couldn't help but thinking of that John Denver song of Toledo, Ohio. Have you heard that one?
No.
Oh, look up Toledo, Ohio. There's a wonderful, cute little song by John Denver about Toledo, Ohio. And it goes, the lyrics go something like, Saturday nights in Toledo, Ohio is like being nowhere at all. But that's it. I mean, when we're identifying with the body, we're basically nowhere at all. There's nothing at all. The body does nothing at all. Anyway, please go on.
Okay. All right. So,
forgive the discretion.
That's okay. Quite all right. Toledo, there's nothing going on.
Yeah.
It is not the source of anything. The mistake people have made is in seeing Jesus as pointing out an accusing finger at the body. This principle cannot be emphasized enough. The body is not the problem. The following passage from the Secret Vows in chapter 28 offers us one of the clearest statements in the Course about this mistake of seeing the body rather than the mind. And our time is almost up. So I don't know if we have time to read
I think you could just finish that sentence, so we'll be at the bottom of the page. That's perfect.
All right, so Jesus says, who punishes the body is insane. For here the little gap, the belief in separation, is seen, and yet it is not here. It, the body, has not judged itself nor made itself to be what it is not. Does not seek to make of pain a joy and look for lasting pleasure in the dust. Does not tell you what its purpose is and cannot understand what it is for. It does not victimize because it has no will, no preferences and no doubts. It does not wonder what it is, and so it has no need to be competitive. It can be victimized but cannot feel itself as victim. It accepts no role but does what is told without attack. I'm going to leave it off there, and we can start back. We can back up.
I think backing up next week is perfect, yeah.
We'll back up to the previous, and we'll say, ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in.
Okay, I'm Googling that.
It's called Anthem.
Thanks for the hour of sharing and the music, Lynn. Have a great week, everyone.
You're welcome. The song is called Anthem. It's one of my very, very favorite Leonard Cohen songs.
Okay.
And please check it out. All right, I love you, Bruce. Thank you so much for joining me here today. And I'm going to go see what else turned on in my house when the electricity came back on.
All right. Power to all. The true unifying power.
All right.
Have a great week.
You too. And turn the mic back over to you, Carrie and Iris. The mic is all yours.
Right. Thank you. Wow. Wonderful. Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, the body, it's just an imaginary wall, limitation that we've made around God. So we can look at it and say, no, it's not, and convince us that we get sick and old and die and suffer. And everything that we allow into our awareness, oh,